Now, back to the Eric Stewart Show.
Welcome back. Stuart Rosenthal from The Beacon joins me. Good morning.
Good morning, Eric.
What do you have for us today out of The Beacon newspaper?
Well, let's talk about some stories in our money section this time. Mm-hmm. One of them, the first story I'll talk about actually is about a health topic, but it's definitely money related. There's been a lot in the news, people have probably read, about the problems that people face when they're in a hospital, possibly for several days. Mm-hmm. Thinking they're being treated as an inpatient, because they are an inpatient. They're lying, they're in a room, they're mm-hmm. admitted, given a room, mm-hmm. they're given a bed, they're seeing a doctor, they're having surgery or other kinds of treatments done. And yet they find when they're let out of the hospital that they've only been under, quote, observation, unquote, and not been officially admitted.
Oh.
Now, it's weird that you say, well, what do you mean I wasn't admitted? You gave me a room. I saw a doctor. You served me for days here. How could I not have been admitted?
Right.
It's an official designation that the hospital is in charge of doing. And the problem is that Medicare will only cover your skilled nursing care at the end of a 3-day hospital stay where you were an admitted patient, not where you're under observation.
Hmm.
So there are thousands and thousands of, for a number of years now, of people who have gone into the hospital, had hip replacement or other kinds of surgery or whatever things that they needed that were they came in on an emergency basis generally, and then they thought they were admitted. And when they were let out and sent to skilled nursing care, after a month in skilled nursing, they get a bill for $15,000 because you never went through the 3 days in the hospital as an admitted patient. So there's been an uproar about this whole thing, and Congress is looking into it. It has not yet passed any legislation to change this, but people are being warned and told, hospitals now must tell you within 48 hours, which I think, within 24 to 48 hours, whether or not you are admitted or under observation. But that may also be a couple of days. You might find out then that you're not admitted, and
right.
then what do you do?
Right.
So you can appeal it. You can appeal it to the Medicare's denial. But generally speaking, they say you're not going to win that appeal because it's up to the hospital to make this designation. So you really have to get active here and have an advocate on your behalf. Lobby the hospital to make it official that you were really there for the right reason. And I'll tell you this, there is a mention in the article explaining, you wonder, why would hospitals do this? What do they gain from that? Well, the problem is this, that Medicare also audits the hospitals. And if Medicare decides, and apparently it does frequently enough, that someone who the hospital says was an admitted patient was really only there to be observed, then they refuse to pay the hospital. So the hospital's left holding the bag. So that happened enough where the hospitals decided to err on the side of caution for their benefit mm-hmm. and to not actually admit everybody. So that's where it comes from.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What else?
Oh, okay. Well, we have a housing section in this month's issue. We have that 4 times a year.
Right.
And a couple of very interesting stories. A woman in Bowie, Maryland, a divorcee, mm-hmm. ended up finding that she had this house that she really couldn't afford to keep up and had lots of bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And so she advertised for fellow older women who might want to share the house with her. And over the course of a number of years, she's been through this a lot and she's learned a lot about the process. So she's now formed something called the Golden Girls Network. She's got her own website.
Hmm.
She's got more than 100 listings in this metropolitan area of women like her who have space to rent out or who are looking for a space. It's a matchmaking service, basically, very inexpensive for those who want to use it. And she's written a book on the process, too. How do you prepare your house to share it? What do you have to be aware of? What can you learn from the process?
Hmm.
So it's very interesting. And that's just one of about 10 stories in our housing section this month.
The Beacon newspaper. Read all about it today. Pick up your free copy of the Beacon newspaper at over 1,500 locations here in Washington, D.C. and Virginia. You can also read it online at thebeaconnewspapers.com. That's thebeaconnewspapers.com. And if you'd like to know where your closest pickup point for paper is, you can call them as well at 301-949-9766. All right, good. 301-949-9766. Stuart, always great to have you on the show.
I always enjoy it too, Eric. Thanks a lot.
Hey, the weather's turned colder. Obviously not now, but when the time does, at that time of year, we often get the question in real estate, I want to sell my home, but should I wait to go on the market until after the winter? I want you to remember what I'm about to tell you, because it will come up in your mind that you should be selling your house in October, November, December, or January. There's such a big difference in how the market acts. Thanks to Casey Margano for this article. This year, it seems to be coming up more than usual. With many sellers downsizing in a slower market, it appears that sellers are trying to figure out whether to put their house on the market in the fall or will the market be better next spring. It's taken a few years, but sellers do understand that the prices of the mid-2000s are gone, and they aren't coming back anytime soon. But like anybody, if waiting until the spring will get them more money, obviously the choice would be to wait. There are many factors that need to be looked at to answer the question effectively. It is true that during the fall, there are fewer sales than during the spring market. However, it is also a fact that there are fewer homes on the market at the same time. And apparently, 30% less homes on the market, with lower competition, it's going to be easier for buyers to find your home. Now, the fact of the matter is, there are typically fewer sales during the fall, but once the spring season gets in high gear, there is also a 30% spike with more sales in the spring. So, it's pretty much a wash. You have 30% increase in sales and a 30% increase in buyers. The fall market inventory is made up of a lot of homes that, for one reason or another, did not sell during the previous spring and summer market. Just as an aside, my previous broker used to say they were like the kernels at the bottom of the popcorn bag that would get caught in your teeth. You know, the listings that are on, and they've been on there for 6 to 8 months. There's a reason why they've sat there for a long time. Well, most of the time, it's best to keep your house on the market and not take it off. I always say that, and this is again Casey saying this, I always say if you're not on the market, you may just miss that perfect buyer. Also, even as the traffic is lower, the people that are looking at this time of the year are more serious. You get less, but better traffic. Hey, let's think about it. Buyers who are braving the elements and interrupting their commitments to view houses are serious about finding their next home. Winter house hunters usually fall into two camps. They either plain old need a place to live fast, or they need to close on their new home by year's end for tax reasons. Today, buyers seem to have an almost stunning lack of urgency. So by having your home on the market over the winter, you can try to capitalize on the urgency of this season's tax buyers. So the old adage is that if it won't sell, it is not on the market, it works well. There are exceptions to this. So if your home backs to a large road and or when the leaves come off the trees, it accents a negative, well, then maybe you're better off waiting until the leaves grow on the trees again. As an aside to that, I recently sold a home in Burke, Virginia, and it backs up to the Fairfax County Parkway. The home had been on the market last year with a different broker, and when I met with the seller, I advised her that her house had unfortunately come on the market at the worst time of the year. The house was clearly right on the Fairfax County Parkway. All the leaves were down, and she really needed to wait until the following spring. Well, guess what? The leaves filled in. We had a buyer come in this spring, and they bought the house. They were an out-of-town buyer, needed to find a home at that right time in the market where the inventory was down, the number of buyers were up, and the leaves had filled in, so the road was less obvious. Sure, the new buyer, they're responsible to know what they're buying, but that's their responsibility. As the seller's agent, it's my job to get the seller sold for top dollar. So if you back up to power lines, have a busy road, or some other negative aspect to your property, you want to think about when the right time is visually to put your home on the market. In the same way, it's best to put a home on the market with a pool when? In the summertime. That's when the houses sell the best that have pools. Unless, again, the inventory altogether is way down, in which case, selling a house with a pool in the middle of February works just fine. Buyers want a good value. A good value to a buyer means that they will be firm negotiators, okay, and will try to get more bang for their buck. Buyers are known to ask for the moon, but when they love something, they will pay a fair price also. Most buyers in today's market just don't have the money or the time to shell out in making major repairs or tackling huge remodeling projects. They want a house to be move-in ready and in superior condition. So if this is your home, you have what they want. Just remember that buyers are picky, and especially so now. Thanks again to Casey Margoneaux for his thoughts on this. You know, Widow Care, we've started Widow Care to help widows and widowers in distress. And becoming a widow or widower is just a real shock to one's life. And often without a family or a social network to rely on, social isolation, depression, and job loss can further deteriorate the widowed individual's life. At Widow Care, we aim to mobilize volunteers to help widows in distress, to sustain their lives and empower their future, and reciprocate with other widows. I want to invite you to join Widow Care. Beginning this month, our Widow Care 100 campaign has started. And by engaging 100 donors to donate $100 each, we can celebrate continued education, empowerment, and engagement with our members. You care, we care, Widow Care. Go to widowcare.org to give your donation today. Don't go away. Lots more of the Eric Stewart Show to come.